Welcome back to N Express, where we are at our main event, a memorial, if you will, for Mr. Iwata, who unfortunately passed away over the weekend. Nintendo just issued an official comment the other day, yesterday, regretting the passing of Mr. Iwata and sharing that now the two remaining figureheads of Nintendo are running the company for the time being, though there is speculations and rumors that Miyamoto will be taking over for him. That's a discussion for another time. Right now, we just want to take the time to remember a person that not only was a generous, kind-hearted CEO for a company that we all love, but a true creative force that really changed the industry in a positive way and reminded a lot of people that games are fun.
Yeah, that is why it hit me so hard when I found out last night while I was preparing for our podcast today that he passed away. And it was actually Aaron who passed on the bad news. And I was kind of floored because, I wrote up this sort of tribute to the man over on our website, soundinsight.org. You can check it out. And I'm not the type of person to usually do that kind of thing for celebrities and or artists because, I don't know these people personally. I've never met any of these people in real life. So usually what I try to do is I will write something if I'm a huge fan and if I feel like I have some sort of like personal connection to this person and or have an extensive knowledge of his or her career, right? And or what they did in their life. But it hit me really hard because Nintendo has always been a part of my life ever since I can remember. I mean, my earliest memories as a child is playing Nintendo video games. And the thing about him is that he had this sort of personality that you can't not help but love because he felt like such a, not just a kind person, but he felt like a child. He felt like you can see that he had a love for the industry, not just Nintendo, but video games, the medium. And it came clear whenever you watch a Nintendo Direct or whenever you see him pop up live on an E3 event and or in an interview, he's not your typical corporate wig, some guy in a suit who all he cares about is money and doesn't care about making quality products and or doesn't care about the fans and or the people who are buying the products. He was completely the opposite. He's the kind of person that I would want working with me. I would want to work for him. Like he's a one of a kind. You're talking about a man who, and this is the president of a multi-billion dollar company, who decided to hire Robot Chicken to create this stop motion animation for their E3 event last year, which would feature him in it fighting Reggie. Can you think of like a corporate exec or a president of a multi-billion dollar company that has that much personality who can go on camera and become sort of like this celebrity himself? You know what I mean? I
Or a
mean,
puppet,
or a
even.
puppet. Yeah, in the case of this year's E3 event, the fact that they hired a Jim Henson company to develop these puppets based on the three main go guys at Nintendo, like him, Miyamoto, and of course Reggie. I don't even know where to start. I'm kind of like a little choked up right now talking about this.
I mean, it's crazy when you think about all that he did. He's largely responsible for opening the doors to Nintendo and giving us such a clear view of this secretive company that no one got a view of before. They used to have such a closed door policy. They didn't let any information leak out. And he was so open and so eager about the idea of sharing what Nintendo was doing that he opted to host the Nintendo Directs almost regularly. What an incredible change of pace for a company that has been so zip-lipped for so many years.
I think
Yeah.
I
Didn't
want
think.
to interact.
Yeah, I think that was the great thing about Iwata was that he wanted to remain in touch with the fans. Like he showed great charisma and passion to all the Nintendo fans dedicated to their products, so.
I think also it's because when he took over as president, he realized that a lot of these young gamers or fans of Zelda and Super Mario and just Nintendo in general had no idea who the people behind the closed doors are. Who are these people who are making these games? Who was the ex-president of Nintendo? He realized that like this great man dies after after 50 years of running the company, he's taking over. And then he looks at his staff and he's like, these people should be in the spotlight. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this a few weeks ago during the E3 event. What does he do during that event? You know, criticize it all you want. Okay, it had problems, but they actually put some of these developers and some of the people who work at Nintendo in front of the camera and put a spotlight on these people because he values what they do and the work that they do. Mm-hmm. And he himself thought it was important to put himself in a spotlight because it's about, it's sort of like about branding yourself, but it's also about taking pride in this company, you know? And the thing that I love about him is that he was sort of the spokesperson, the face, the leader of fighting off all of the hatred towards Nintendo, fighting off all of the haters. Like, I wrote this in my piece that this is a man who actually punched somebody out during did you hear about this?
I was not aware of this, by the way, until I read it in your piece.
During one of the Nintendo investors meetings, one of the stockholders, whatever, got so angry at him, he just kept on attacking him and attacking Nintendo and insulting him and the company, and he couldn't take it anymore. And so he stood up for not just Nintendo, but we, the fans who love Nintendo and the product that they make, because they basically were trying to convince him to do something crazy, like, for example, sell off the IPs like the Super Mario and the Zelda games and put them on different consoles and everything he is totally opposed to, right? Mm-hmm. But that's the thing is that what these people don't realize is you need the competition in order to keep the industry alive and well, and in order to get these people to want to do better. Without that competition, you lose that drive, and especially the people behind closed doors, like the people who dish out the money, the producers, the big wigs, the CEOs, et cetera, some of these people don't actually care about creativity. They don't care about the art form. They don't care about making fans happy. They just want to make money at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And if you take away the competition, that would be the worst thing that can happen to the video game industry. So all of these Nintendo haters, they can say all they want about Nintendo, but what they don't realize is the whole entire video game industry owes everything to Nintendo to this day. I don't care if Sony's winning the console war right now. They owe everything to Nintendo, mm-hmm. because you can't have two companies like Microsoft and Sony releasing the exact same games. You can't have one company dominate. He knew that Nintendo has value and will forever have value in the industry, and it cannot ever close their doors because the whole entire industry would hurt. And right now, in my opinion, no matter if you work for Sony or Microsoft and or Nintendo, everyone is at a loss right now because we just lost a really great man who was the president of a company. And even if you can criticize some of the decisions that he's made over the years and scratch your head thinking about some of the weird choices that he's made, he's also had great success, because mm-hmm. you know, we have to remember that he is the one who started Amiibo, and he is the one that made the Wii the number one selling gaming console over Microsoft's console and over Sony's console,
all simultaneously driving the DS and the 3DS right now too.
The
DS might just be he's the one that basically turned Nintendo into the company that I think a lot of people think of Nintendo as being now. It back in the day, in the days of the NES and Super NES, that was not the same Nintendo, the quirky weird company that we think of them as now. Mm-hmm. That started with Iwata, because the former president, you know, Hiroshi Yamauchi, he was a pretty, he didn't even play video games, he didn't care for them, didn't need anything to do with them. He was just running a toy company, and this is what was making him money. Iwata came from, obviously, he came from a programming. He made video games. Yeah. He started at the bottom programming stuff like Kirby's Dream Land for HAL.
And Balloon Fight.
I think his first Nintendo thing was NES Open Golf, right? Like, that was the first thing he ever did for Nintendo.
And he worked on my favorite game of all time, Earthbound.
That's right.
Yeah, he started HAL Laboratory back in the day, right after high school. He went to study at college. He went to study at the Tokyo Institute of Technology. He majored in computer science, got the job at HAL Laboratory, and then that's how he started his career, and he just worked his way up the ladder. But yeah, it's all about the personality. It's all the fact. It's about the fact that he himself is a gamer. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's that famous quote from him in which he says, "On my business card, I am a corporate president. In my mind, I am a game developer, but in my heart, I am a gamer."
And he transformed the Nintendo culture into something like that. Now that company is so self-deprecating. They have such a great sense of humor that I don't think any other video game company has nearly as much as them. They're so weird. They make weird decisions that you can criticize, but I love that about them. They are offering an alternative, and that's their way of survival in this video game industry now. I hope they maintain it. I hope they carry on that legacy that he introduced, which is this Nintendo is the alternative. They are the weird little funny experimental company that just makes amazing games but takes huge risks that sometimes pay off and sometimes don't. But they're always exciting, and you never know what they're going to do. Which is why everybody, when the NX was announced, everybody, it's exciting because we don't know what the hell they're going to do with this system. Yeah, like, exactly. What kind of weird thing is this going to be?
Mm-hmm. And in light of all of the tragedy and the heartbreak, it is really, really encouraging to see the gaming culture and the entire industry sort of stop and respect this man and respect each other. Which is a crazy change of pace. Like, I don't remember a time ever when absolutely everyone in the industry just stopped, paid their respects to a man, and the console war came to an end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The past few days have just been nonstop, like, Twitter comments, messages, all sorts of stuff, and it's all just been remembering this one man who changed the industry. And I think people are beginning to realize just how much an impact Iwata had on all of us.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And because the thing about Nintendo is they push for these weird, offbeat, sort of crazy ideas, but you need people in the industry to do this.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we would just have EA Sports, like the next NHL, the next NBA 2K, and a bunch of first-person shooters like Call of Duty.
The Activision and EA and every company would be making those games.
That's what we would have.
And I guarantee you know what the PS5 is going to be. It's going to be a really powerful system that's going to have the almost exact same controller. It's going to play the same games. And some of them are going to be really good. Don't get me wrong. You have to have room for both things. Like, you have to have that. But then you need somebody to also push the boundaries a little bit and experiment.
Yeah. I mean, there is no good time for someone to pass away, but it's such a bad time for Nintendo in the sense that moving forward, all of these ideas, the NX, the fact that they're going to be making mobile games, their partnership with DNA, you know, so on and so forth, it's his baby. It's his ideas. He's the brainchild behind their five-year plan moving forward. You know, even with Amiibo, he's the one who invented Amiibo. It was his idea. You know what I mean? And so now that he's gone, I mean, I'm sure Nintendo's going to do okay. But it's kind of sad to know that he's never going to see the NX revealed. He's never going to see how big Amiibo is eventually going to become because it's only getting started. He's never going to see the first mobile game when it's released and guaranteed it's going to sell like a gazillion copies worldwide.
What incentive for Nintendo to really put even more passion into it? I mean, they put their hearts and souls into everything they make. But when you're doing it out of respect for the person that started, I bet you these things are going to come off even better as a result because of Iwata. Again, because of Iwata, I'm guessing that Nintendo is going to really, really do their best to respect his wishes and his designs for all of these things. Mm-hmm. And the end result's going to be glorious.
And you know, the thing is, a lot of people are somewhat paranoid and or scared because what if the next president doesn't have the same sort of like mission and philosophy as he does, right? But I think he's so well respected, especially within the company, that I can't imagine someone going against any of the decisions that he's already laid out moving forward for the next like 5 or so years. And I can't see Nintendo changing their direction and or their philosophy and or mission.
No.
And I mean, this is a company that's strongly committed to producing and marketing products of the highest quality. And this is what we talk about each and every single week on the podcast. Nintendo is not the kind of company who will release a console and it breaks down within 2 weeks, that they have to spend over $1 billion shipping consoles back and forth to the consumer.
Or broken games that need day one patches just to work.
Yeah, you know, when they release something, they release it because they know it's working and it's working perfectly. So that's why I'm okay with Nintendo delaying a console and or, for example, the Legend of Zelda game, because I know at least when I get it, it's not going to break down or be buggy, you know? Mm-hmm.
The only question I have is, you know, a guy like Iwata is not easily replaced, and I'm sure they'll want to stick with the same path that he's laid out for them. But will you get somebody in there who's just as innovative and has just as good ideas and pushes the right ideas, like pushing through the DS, a less powerful system that looked incredibly ugly when it first came out, against the Sony PSP, but believing in that product, believing that a touchscreen was going to work before anybody even had an iPhone in their hands, mm-hmm. like that this was a way to play video games. Is that next person, while I'm sure they're going to want to do those things, will they be able to carry on his sort of legacy and innovate in the way that he could?
Well, the thing is, they do have a plan for like the next, say, 4 or 5 years. I mean, Nintendo yes. always thinks ahead. So
the recent future, yes, it's going to be fine.
Yeah, the recent future is going to be fine. But my worry is what happens after the NX.
Me too.
Yeah.
Because when you actually have to start getting creative, then what happens?
I would still argue that all of his friends, I mean, I'm not saying coworkers, I'm saying all of his friends, Miyamoto, Reggie, all of these people who have been behind Nintendo while Iwata was president, they're all still right there. Mm-hmm. And I think they're just as creative a force. If the rumors are true that Miyamoto might step in as president, I think we could almost see an even more artistic, even more creative, even more wacky Nintendo come out of it. I mean, this is the guy that came up with Mario.
Yeah. Like
that's very possible, yeah.
I totally agree.
Who knows what that would look like if that's the case. I think that with the designers that are still there, we're still in great hands. The question is whether they'll choose to change directions down the line and go somewhere else because Iwata's not there telling them that this is still the best idea.
Yeah, it's tough. We don't know. You know, I'm not going to sit here and speculate because I have faith in the company.
I have too. I mean, like, these are all, I mean, that's the amazing thing about Nintendo. I mean, like, everybody works so closely together. It's like a family. I mean, it's hard to imagine anyone else is just going to take the reins and just be like, well, let's sell everything and, you know, make a PS4, you know? But I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, they can't compete that way anyway. I think they know that.
They know that.
You're going up against Sony and Microsoft. And I know Nintendo's doing fine. They've got a big war chest, but you know they can't compete with Sony and Microsoft directly when it comes to tech.
No, I will always see Nintendo, even 5 years down the line, still like innovating and changing the way we play video games. So I'm not too worried.
And I'm guessing there's a lot of loyalty to this man and to his vision. I mean, this is the CEO who infamously cut his own paycheck in half so that he would not have to fire his team. I mean, we would be remiss if we did not share that.
Yeah.
And I know everyone's sharing it, but that's incredible. That's mind-blowing. Of all things that Iwata ever did, that is the most peculiar and unheard of. Mm-hmm. And this is talking about the guy that ran Nintendo.
And his reason for it was great, you know, that he didn't think that people could produce great games if they were constantly worried about being laid off.
And I think that that's how we should view our industry. I think that's what the gaming industry should always be.
Yeah, it'd be nice if every CEO acted like he did, at least from what I know. From everything that everybody said, the guy was absolutely fantastic. He's created a culture in Nintendo that nobody wants to leave Nintendo. Once you're in, why would you ever leave? It's one of the best companies to work for.
Yeah.
I think now is a good opportunity to go ahead, go one by one. I would like to hear your guys' favorite Iwata moments.
Oh my god, can I start?
Absolutely. Go ahead, Ricky.
When he says, I'm about making games and I'm about playing games. Last night I played Super Smash. That's my game. I kicked some you-know-what, and I took his name. His name was Reggie.
wait, the quote's not done. The quote's not done.
And he's
finish
like,
it,
has Nintendo's president, I'm also all about asking questions. So Reggie, I have a question for you. Who's your daddy? Come on. I mean, like,
that was a great one.
And of course, I don't have the Japanese accent, but you know what I mean? Like, oh my god, he's such a lovable person. Jeez.
Yeah. I love that he did things in English. Like, all the directs were in English, too. They did not have to do that, but it could have been in Japanese only, and we would have just read a translation of it. But nope, he went the extra mile, and he did it himself. That was a nice little touch.
You know what, like, Jackie Chan is for action films? He is for the video game.
Yeah. Yeah, he had to learn his lines phonetically, right? Just like Chan did.
Exactly. And because he has this charisma and this personality, and because he's just so funny and quirky and awkward, and at times sarcastic, like, it's just hilarious to listen to him speak in the English language. You know what I mean? He has this big smile on his face, and he knows he sounds silly, but he doesn't care because he's having fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your favorite moment?
For me, it has to be like the quote that we talked about earlier, like his keynote speech at GDC 2005, where he talked about, like, you know, how he on the business cards he's the corporate president. Like, I don't want to repeat it, but like for me, like the first time I heard about that quote, it was like it just spoke very strongly to me about the man, because like this is a man that put like passion and dedication to his work, and it's something that I've always respected out of Iwata. So for me, it would have to be the quote that we've mentioned earlier.
How about you, Patrick?
You know, my moment is the one that happened quite a bit, and it was every time he said that he was bringing the information directly to us. That always put a smile on my face every time I saw him do that. And then when they started making referential comments about the whole directly to you, and even joking about it, it still put a smile. It just represented to me what Iwata was. Mm-hmm. It was a guy that wanted to communicate with the fans, and he had fun with it, as opposed to just doing this like robotically.
Mm-hmm.
I loved every time he said directly to you.
Yeah, I mean, you felt like there was heart behind it. It wasn't sort of like a text in front of him saying that he has to remember.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons that I feel so much loyalty to Nintendo as a company, is because they just don't feel like a cold-blooded, you know, profit-driven company to me. And I know they are a company, and they do need to make money, and mm-hmm. I'm not naive about that, but they really do a good job within the last 15 years or so of making this a... seem very personal to each and every oil fan.
Yeah. I think for me, having watched so many Iwata directs where he, especially in English, he's just staring straight into the camera, delivering his lines the best he can, rocking it, I might add. He does phenomenally. Like, the English is not his first language, obviously, and he still did phenomenally, like, delivering every single message. I never once couldn't understand him, so I think we should really respect that, because he'd never had to learn English. But then seeing this very well-dressed CEO get in a fist fight with Reggie last year during the Nintendo Direct, we start with Robot Chicken. That's hilarious. So what do you do after that? And you immediately knew it was for Super Smash Bros., but just seeing them do this ridiculous over-the-top fight and not breaking character the entire time, being completely straight-faced the entire time, is just the best moment of all of last E3, I think.
I agree. I think it's one of the greatest moments of any E3, period. I mean, it's something that everyone talks about to this day, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of people talk about the fuck-ups, right? Like, when Xbox screwed up this, or when Sony screwed up this, or when the audio didn't work, and so on and so forth. But when you talk about the highlights, like, you usually talk about just the games they show, but never about the actual presentation, about the people who are presenting. In this case, we're talking about the presentation, not the games they're showing off, and we're talking about the presenters, in this case being the president of Nintendo. You know, nobody else does this.
Could any other company do that? I don't think anybody else could. I think they'd be awkward and embarrassing for anybody else to try it. But with Nintendo, it's endearing.
The thing about Microsoft is Phil Spencer is a gamer. I mean, he started working at Microsoft. It was his first job, and he's been there ever since. He's never left. He's a lifer, right? I don't know if he has the charm and personality, you know, to pull it off, but he is at least a gamer, true at heart. You know what I mean? Like, he loves video games. And people that, and I'm only saying this because I don't want to come across as like we do a Nintendo show, so we hate Microsoft and or Sony. Those people actually do love video games too. But there is a difference, because they are still working in this company that initially, like, wasn't really a video game company. You know what I mean? Like, Nintendo's done all kinds of crazy things for 125 years, but they were always sort of like a toy company. But Nintendo became as big as they are, like a billion-dollar company, because of video games. They built this industry, whereas everyone else just jumped on board. And so it's different. So you have a bunch of guys who don't give a shit about video games. They just see a way to make more money. So even though some of these guys who work for different companies are gamers, they're still surrounded by people who are non-gamers. Whereas with Nintendo, I kind of feel like these people are all artists. I mean, do you remember this year's E3 event when we had the spotlight on Yoshi and they decided to interview one of the ladies who brainstormed the idea to make the Yoshi amiibo out of yarn, you know?
Yeah. That it was a great little piece they did.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the kind of people they have working over at Nintendo. It's not just a bunch of accountants punching numbers and looking at the stock market and trying to figure out how much money they've made or lost or will make or lose, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, and it's like you said, money does matter to them, but not as much as it does for other companies. Because if so, then they would have just done what everyone else does and release the most powerful console and not worry about evolving or paying homage or respect to the IPs they have, like Zelda or Super Mario Brothers, et cetera, et cetera. Like, this is a company that takes pride in what they've done and in their history.
And, you know, a lot of that, like what you're describing there, that's Iwata, his influence on it. Because, you know, in the days of the Super NES and the Nintendo 64 and the GameCube, they were essentially producing a system that was just as powerful or even more so than their competitors. They had innovation in there, don't get me wrong, but they were trying to, you know, keep up with the Joneses, so to speak. And Iwata made the decision not to go that route. After Yamauchi stepped down and Iwata went in, it was, you know, let's go fun. It doesn't have to be as powerful. We're not going to try to compete with specs. We're going to do this a different way. And he sort of ushered in that new culture of fun Nintendo as opposed to powerful Nintendo, which they once had been. You know, they were the kings, of course, at one point in time. Mm-hmm. And the other companies out there, the reason I don't think they can get away with doing a video like that is they don't cultivate that image. That's just not Sony and it's not Microsoft. If they tried to do that now, it would just be kind of embarrassing because that's not really what they're all about.
And people would get mad at them.
Yeah, they would. Yeah, absolutely. But Nintendo has, for the last, you know, Nintendo's made lots of what people call kids games, but are really just great games.
Yeah.
They've made those forever. They have that. They can do that with their image. They've done weird stuff like a Zelda cartoon, which was awful, but, you know, it's very Nintendo to do something like that.
Yeah, but you know what? The thing is, even during the Play It Loud marketing campaign years, like even those Play It Loud marketing ads, which were for games like, say, Conquer and or, I don't know, I can't think of whatever else right now, but they were just as goofy as the ads for some of their quote-unquote kids games. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's true.
They were just always weird. Like, Nintendo's always been this really strange company. And
marketing.
In terms of like marketing their product, because they are a Japanese company, but they're trying to market their product to a worldwide audience. And that's really tricky because they're trying to cater to the Japanese and to their own personal tastes. But they're also trying to make this product not just accessible, but appealing to the rest of the world. But that's kind of what I like about it, because it's so, so refreshing. I can't remember who said this, but someone said that the day video games can make you feel emotion, that can make you cry, then that's when the video game industry has succeeded. And I think over the years, Nintendo has done this with their video games. Like, have you ever played a video game and or returned to a video game and you just feel this heavy sense of nostalgia? You feel the love for the industry and for gaming and for Nintendo. You know what I mean? Like, in all honesty, we reviewed Super Mario 3 not too long ago on the podcast. And when I finished that game, I had sort of like tears in my eyes because I remember that experience of finishing this game that took me forever to do back in the day. But I stuck with it and I wouldn't give up. And I finished the game because I loved it so much. And it was such a victory. You know what I mean? And that kind of response that I get from playing Nintendo, I don't always get from playing, no offense, Sony or Microsoft games.
Yeah, there's something with the imagination that Nintendo has always sort of attached itself to. That they really, I know when I was a kid, the best thing about playing Nintendo games was that it made my imagination run wild. And I could tell that they all had a really big imagination. Now, other games were fun, and many of them I've loved over the years by other companies. But I don't think any other company has ever just made me dream more than Nintendo. Nintendo did as a kid. It was, and that's why I enjoy playing. It's so nostalgic, like you said, to play those games now, and you remember what it was like back when you were a kid experiencing this for the first time. And it was a game that just sort of let you run wild for a little while.
Iwata really, really pushed for approachability for everyone to jump in. He said video games are fun and everyone should play them. And I think we should spend a little bit of time talking about the result of that, because what we got out of that was the best-selling console ever, the Wii, right alongside the Nintendo DS, which both made staggering amounts of money, staggering amounts of sales. But it was for a reason, and that was because he was the man that really made these games for everyone.
The DS is the second best of all time, right?
Just a correction, just because, people will email us and complain. The Wii was the best-selling console of that generation. The DS is the second best-selling console, period. The PlayStation 2 is the best-selling console of all time, but
That's
only
right.
by a million more than the DS.
Yeah, it's really close.
Yeah, very close. Which I know a million is a lot, but come on.
Not in the numbers you're talking about. It's like 159 million units the DS has
It's
sold.
154 for DS,
Okay, there we
155 for PS2.
go.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right, everyone, go buy a DS. We can do this.
You know, that's one of only two Nintendo-made consoles that I have not owned, the DS and the Game Boy Advance. Those are the only ones I've never owned.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I'm one of those people that did not help Nintendo get over that mountain there.
It's funny, because I had the Game Boy Advance and then the DS, but I stopped.
Oh, and
I
I
saw, I
love my
saw.
3DS.
Yeah, I stopped on the 3DS.
I think I wrote something on the 3DS for the site, naming it. I think it ended up as the fifth best console when we ranked all of them. Not including your guys' podcast. It infuriated me to no end when I was listening.
We won't get into last week's podcast right now. It's a bit controversial.
N64 is the best. Everyone out there, N64 is the best console ever.
Yeah, well,
Hashtag
first of all,
N64 the best.
as one of my friends pointed out, you guys cheated because NES was put back into the top five, and you just completely forgot I put it in the top five, and therefore it ended up like being the special mention. Go back and listen to the podcast. You
Hey,
cheated, Tim.
I didn't say
my
special.
fear was that you were going to swap it with the N64. And so the fact that I was like, it was like this huge risk for me.
Oh, God.
But I was like, oh, hopefully he'll just swap the SNES back and I'll have moved the N64 up a spot and consider that my victory.
Yeah,
And it worked. So my power play worked. It was high risk, but high reward. I pushed it up a place. Next time it's number one.
If you haven't listened to our last podcast, I highly recommend listening to it. I think it's by far our best podcast. We've received a lot of positive feedback. It was a riot.
I can agree with that. I had a great time listening to that one. I wanted to yell. I was in a coffee shop at the time, and I just wanted to scream out loud at some of the things you guys were saying. But I won't repeat any of those thoughts that went through my head.
And I might add, just watch your back. One of my best friends was so mad at you for knocking the N64 out that he almost just slammed his computer shut and said no more.
Okay, first of all, I'm just going to make this clear right now. I love the N64. I knocked the N64 out of the top five because I knew Tim and Matt picked it as their number one choice. So I wanted to get the conversation heated because I thought it would be more entertaining for the listeners and we would get a lot of feedback. But I also knew that the N64 would be back on the list. So I wasn't afraid. And if no one put the N64 back on the top five, I was in last spot, so I could have done it.
Yeah, I knew you were kind of doing that to get
Yeah.
ahead. I fell for the bait, but I tried to play the game right. But more to the point.
None of the popular, none of the Wii nor the DS made it on there, and yet those are the two best-selling Nintendo consoles of all time, are they not?
Yeah.
And when you look at these two consoles, I think one of the reasons that we probably didn't pick it is there's not that same sense of nostalgia, but also what happened to the consoles late in their lifetimes, which is really on topic, I feel. If you look at the start of the Wii and the DS and everything that Nintendo put out on those consoles, they were so creative, so well generated, and just the whole console and the concept behind both of those was so clever and so fun to play with that as soon as everyone else saw it and just said, oh, I can make money with that too, it almost ruined the console. We're almost lucky that that hasn't happened to the 3DS and the Wii U. Like, I know that sales aren't as good, and people are like, oh, the Wii U's a failure. But at the same time, I'm like, well, no one's killed my Wii U yet. No one's bastardized it with terrible games.
Well, but I don't think anybody killed the 3DS or the Wii. I mean, they were like the top selling consoles for Nintendo, and they were the top selling consoles of the time. But I do understand what you're saying. Like, the competition, I mean, this has been happening since day one. The competition's always taken ideas that Nintendo has started and done it better, because for whatever reason they have better technology and or the money and or the people that can get it done properly. I mean, it's like Patrick said, can Nintendo really compete with Sony and Microsoft in putting out a system, a console that's just as powerful as the Xbox One or PS4, and creating the exact same kind of games that they have? They would lose in the battle, because they've already branded that's their territory. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I don't even think the Kinect or the Move, I don't think the competition really impacted the Wii at all. The Wii did what it did better, and it was more fun to play on.
I think they've never figured out how to use that stuff.
Yeah, I think more what sort of sogged down the experience of the Wii was seeing how many people were just copying Wii Sports. Even 5 years into its lifetime, we were still just getting imitation Nintendo games, but the Nintendo games had so much more passion and creativity in them, so much more polish. They were just so much more fun to play and better games,
yeah, but
that eventually it was just really tiring to see all of these not Nintendo games that were just awful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, Call the DS is a great example of how eventually third parties did figure out what to do with a weird Nintendo system. Nobody knew what to do with that second screen at first, but Nintendo kind of showed them with their own games. They did weird stuff like Nintendogs is one of those things that just made the DS sales rocket, and you know, Brain Age, things like that. And but they showed developers that there were weird things that they could do with that touchscreen that they couldn't do with any other system. And once that install base grew, developers, they started figuring it out, and they did a good, third parties did just fine figuring out how to use a second screen. And I think even with that's carried over into the 3DS, and now they just sort of know, because they cut their teeth on the DS, and third party 3DS games are really good.
And I think all of this to say that without Iwata and his immense influence on Nintendo and the industry, we would have never gotten these experiences, and I don't think that Nintendo would be as fresh and as invigorating as it is currently, and will continue to be in an industry that threatens to get stale.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just Japanese culture in general. Like, I personally love manga. I love Japanese movies. You know, I'm going to start going to the Fantasia Film Festival next week. It's 3 weeks long. I'm going to be watching like one movie per day. And what I love about Japanese movies, Japanese video games, Japanese manga, like just Japanese art in general, is they are always trying to do something new and creative and different from the rest of the world.
It's definitely different with Nintendo. There's no question. I mean, that's what that company's all about.
Yeah. And I think we all here are pro-Tendo, pro-Nintendo. All right. Our thoughts go out to his family and friends, and to Mr. Iwata himself. Thank you, thank you, thank you for everything you've done for this industry and for all of us as gamers. We have been remarkably moved by your work, and there's not one of us here who does not regret your loss. That'll about do it for the main event. We will be right back after a brief break.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today.
President of Nintendo Satoru Iwata has died, aged 55. Marking an end to a life that helped shape the gaming world as we know it. Born in Japan in 1959, Iwata grew up in the city of Sapporo. Interested in electronic games from an early age, after university, Iwata worked at HAL Laboratories, a developer closely affiliated with Nintendo, where he worked on popular franchises including Earthbound and Kirby, also later bringing his programming expertise to bear on Pokemon games. Joining Nintendo in 2000, Iwata took charge as president 2 years later. During his tenure as leader, Nintendo released two of the most successful gaming devices in history, the Nintendo DS handheld and the Nintendo Wii, which eschewed traditional gaming controls in favor of motion-based interaction. The Wii sold over 100 million units, bringing the world of gaming to a broader audience than ever before, and serving as a monument to Iwata's approach to the industry, focusing less on cutting-edge hardware and more on innovative gaming experiences, an approach that's likely to define how Iwata will be remembered. To Nintendo's loyal fans, Iwata was a familiar face, delivering Nintendo news and announcements personally via Nintendo Direct broadcasts, and offering game development insight through the Iwata Asks series of interviews. Although beset by health troubles in his last years, Iwata continued to work, and earlier this year confirmed that Nintendo was working on a new gaming platform, codenamed NX.
On my business card, I am a corporate president. In my mind, I'm a game developer, but in my heart, I am a gamer.
An iconic figure in the industry, under the leadership of Satoru Iwata, Nintendo truly brought gaming to the masses, a legacy that will not soon be forgotten.